Thank you, Derek. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you can stand a bit more doom and gloom. We've had a lot of it today. But I feel that it's necessary for you to hear what I have to say as a run-in to what my wife then will take on, which is the reason that New Zealand has to hang on to its nuclear-free legislation. I've been asked to talk about new nuclear threats, and I have to say that it will be primarily about the United States. This may be a surprise to some of you, because the reports we tend to hear these days are that the new nuclear threats are coming from anywhere but the United States. But it is a fact that I think the United States is once again making the running in terms of developing new roles and new types of nuclear weapons. And I will now present my case for this. I think we have to go back, in fact, to the first Gulf War, which I fear is what we now have to call it. And I particularly recall this because it was a primary reason that made me come out against nuclear weapons in 1991. I used to operate nuclear weapons in the British Navy. Israel's experience in the First Gulf War was a very salutary lesson, not just for Israel, but also for the United States. You may recall that Israelis cowered in their basements in gas masks against 39 Scud missile attacks in the first Gulf War. And already we've seen the first Scud missiles fired against Kuwait. And you may have noticed that only one of them was intercepted out of the four. I do recall hearing afterwards from people who knew among the Iraqi forces that Saddam Hussein had given instructions only to use chemical weapons if his regime was threatened. I fear we are now into that scenario. But the problem for Israel was that it seemed that Saddam Hussein was not deterred by Israel's nuclear weapons from attacking Israel, and even worse, Iraq had no nuclear weapons themselves. This is not meant to happen. And the other problem was that if it did happen, the United States certainly felt that it had no proportionate response. They threatened to use nuclear weapons in the case of a chemical attack. That is a grossly disproportionate response, which they knew would actually not be credible. And I have it on record here that Donald Rumsfeld himself told the Washington Post several years back that President Saddam Hussein would not be deterred by any of the nuclear warheads in the United States arsenal because he knows a U.S. president would not drop a 100-kiloton bomb on Baghdad in order to counter Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. So my first point, I think, here is that it's a credibility problem, and they're trying to correct it. And so we have seen, since the First Gulf War, a steady progression of policy which has led us to the current point. And so the first response by the Americans under the Clinton administration, which was fairly secret, was to try to find some way of dealing with a chemical attack with small nuclear weapons, but primarily with the new precision-guided conventional weapons. And so you've seen a steady development of what are called robust earth penetrators. Some good phallic language there. To deal with hardened or deeply buried shelters, command bunkers, or storage places for weapons of mass destruction. And they have been experimenting with those in Afghanistan. And now this is the next phase. And they're going to undoubtedly use every opportunity they can to experiment again and perfect the new weaponry. The other shock, I think, was that Iraq itself had actually begun to develop a nuclear weapon program and had not been discovered until they went in afterwards. And, of course, as a signatory state of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, this was cheating. But, of course, there was no mention made of the fact that Israel had got a nuclear arsenal that was as big as the British one, but of course had not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, so that was okay. But if ever there was, you know, an example to follow for Iraq, it was Israel. Moving on from that, when President George W. Bush came to power back in January 2001, very soon after that, he gave a talk at a military college in which he openly acknowledged that nuclear deterrence might not work against extremists armed with weapons of mass destruction. And so you had a very interesting public acknowledgement by an American president for the first time that nuclear deterrence is actually irrelevant against the greatest threat to Americans. And I think that is a real problem for them, and it leads to the consequences I'm going to describe. And so what we have now is the American government did a nuclear posture review, as they call it. This was secret. It was presented to Congress in January last year, but parts of it were leaked to the Los Angeles Times in March last year. There's a researcher called William Arkin, who's a very respected defense analyst, and he seems to get a lot of design leaks go to him. And what it came out with was that they had agreed with their president that deterrence, nuclear deterrence, no longer works against extremists. And so we have to have a range of new capabilities which can be used. This is the way to solve this problem. You don't just deter anymore. You're not with nuclear weapons, you use them. And this is a shift that had not happened over the 50 years of American counterproliferation policy. They had relied on deterrence until now. And so the new nuclear posture is for a range of both conventional and nuclear strike systems, especially against hardened targets, better defenses, especially against ballistic missiles. And this is where the ballistic missile defense, the Star Wars that President Reagan developed, cost $90 billion, no results, has now been revived by Bush Jr. And then thirdly, there was revitalized defense infrastructure to provide these new capabilities. So what you have is a huge boondoggle for the arms industry to come up with these new weapons. What are the implications of this? Well, first of all, nuclear deterrence doctrine, I think its days are numbered. And this is an extremely important point, which may be a good outcome, because you may or may not know, but nuclear deterrence is still cited as the final justification for British nuclear weapons, for French nuclear weapons, not so much for Russian or Chinese. But it looks like the Americans are jettisoning nuclear deterrence, and so that argument is going out the window. I happen to be writing, I've written a little book about this, which is outside, and I'm updating it for a revised American edition, which is going to be published at the end of this year. The aim, therefore, is to try to strengthen conventional deterrence, first of all, by using conventional weapons, raising the threshold for nuclear weapon use, but ultimately being prepared to use nuclear weapons. One of the problems of the ballistic missile defense system that is being proposed now, which Australia is on board for, as is Britain, is that, of course, it's been very much tied in with Russia and has excluded China. And this may, of course, be quite deliberate, but the consequence of that, of course, is that China is not going to sit quiet. There are big plans, there are big projects between the United States and Taiwan and the United States and Japan to develop a theater missile defense system, a regionally based defense system, which they merely say is to protect forces in the field and their own territory. But of course, from China's point of view, it is a strategic threat because it could take out their entire strategic ballistic missile force. And therefore, the counter to that is a nuclear arms race again. And that's what China is now engaged upon. And if China goes hard for an increased nuclear arsenal, then India will follow. And then, therefore, Pakistan will follow India. And on we go. The other problem is that, of course, this new posture makes nuclear weapon use much more likely. And finally, of course, it is an incitement to nuclear proliferation. And I think, as North Korea has discovered, you get much better treatment if you claim you've got nuclear weapons than you're trying to get them. So that's the message. You get them quickly. The other problem, of course, we've had is that President Bush and President Putin have tried to put together a treaty to reduce and modernize their own nuclear arsenals as a new form of mutual cooperation to get over their historic enmity. But sadly, the Moscow Treaty that was signed in May is not, in fact, in any way a nuclear disarmament or reductions treaty. It is merely a shifting of categories of warheads into storage and allowing complete freedom. No dismantlement of any warhead is required, no inspection, and effectively it has also ended any chance of being able to implement the old START treaties. START 2 and 3 are now dead. So that is the ends of arms control, basically. That is the other main aim of the Bush administration. But beside all that, you may or may not have noticed that there has been no change to the American and Russian continuation of the high alert state they have of their strategic nuclear forces. They still maintain, on minutes' notice to fire, at least 2,000 strategic warheads on each side. And yet they're meant to be friends. That is the power of nuclear deterrence dogma and the danger of opening that box and saying that that's all over. And that is very worrying because Russia's warning systems have been degraded, they are continuing to degrade, and so there is a danger of an accidental launch, particularly from the Russian side, which continues. And they are going to maintain that system. They do not want to upset that ideological dogma. Moving on from that, as if that wasn't enough, on the 20th of September last year, a new United States national security strategy was announced. And this is now called the Bush Doctrine of Preemption. And you, of course, see it in action at the moment. And this has basically authorized preemptive or preventive military action against even potential threats of weapons of mass destruction. It also has more publicly recognized that nuclear deterrence is irrelevant against extremists, and it's also therefore implied willingness to use low-yield nuclear weapons, even preemptively. And I still fear that if Saddam Hussein is still going in a few days' time and is cornered, that he could authorize use of chemical weapons in the hope that he could cause some heavy casualties either to Israelis or to Americans, and incite them to respond with a nuclear weapon. And this could still happen. Then finally, the sort of crowning of the whole process was on the 11th of December, just before Christmas, a new national strategy to combat weapons of mass destruction was formally published. And this was where they actually came out with an unclassified bringing together of all that previous strategic work that I have talked about. Because remember, the Nuclear Posture Review was secret. This is now, it's an unclassified summary of the Posture Review of the nuclear side and the national security strategy. And that deliberately implied use of nuclear weapons against any use of weapons of mass destruction. It certainly shows an increased American reliance on nuclear weapons while urging others to give them up. And it completely undercut the non-proliferation treaty. And I think this has been very clearly understood by North Korea and Iran. And then the final icing on the cake, I suppose, on the 26th of January this year, there was another leak to Mr. Arkin. It showed that there are US plans to use nuclear weapons in Iraq. Targeting plans have been drawn up. And so you have the hypocrisy of actually proposing to use weapons of mass destruction in order to combat them, and the provocation of undeterrable extremists to use them. Then you get the post hoc justification. You say, See, he had them because he's used them, therefore we were justified in giving it. Just to bring it to an end, following the US example, well, of course, the first one to follow, really, apart from the Russians, was Britain. This is where I feel a personal sense of responsibility, in that I would see the United Kingdom as the overt role model for Saddam Hussein, the first medium-sized power with delusions of grandeur to insist on having nuclear weapons to threaten nuclear terrorism. And, of course, Israel's covert nuclear arsenal provided the regional pretext. Then, of course, India and Pakistan followed the British colonial power, that if Britain needed nukes, then, my God, India and Pakistan need them. And so there you have another following the example. So tragic. And, of course, the reality is that nuclear deterrence is, in fact, state-sponsored nuclear terrorism. That's what it should be called. And finally, I've just seen in the bulletin, the Atomic Scientist, the latest issue, there was an interesting little article about Her Majesty's new nukes. There is no doubt that the British are now under pressure to follow the Americans and that they are now refurbishing the weapons establishment at Aldermaston, and they are going to try to produce bunker-busting nuclear weapons in Britain to be able to parrot the American policy. So far from trying to get rid of them, we're just following again as ever. And I actually would put to you that one of the reasons, in case you're looking for an explanation as to why an intelligent man like Blair should be following Bush so blindly, is Britain's huge nuclear dependence on the United States. We lease Trident missiles from the United States. We have no space program in Britain. We have to have American satellites for our communications and intelligence. We have used the warhead technology of the Americans. We are so locked in to the American system of nuclearism that if we are required to support Bush or the Americans, he just needs to snap his fingers. I think that would be well worth further examination. The good news I leave you with is that I actually see the moment arriving when the non-proliferation treaty is going to collapse. We have a preparatory conference coming up in Geneva, literally end of April. That is going to be a very interesting event, because I think the non-proliferation treaty has been treated like that by the Americans and the British, and so there is no good faith there anymore. I also have noted that nuclear deterrence is gone as well. Those are the two main reasons for keeping the system in status quo. So now we need to move forward to what we should all be actually focusing on, which is an enforceable global treaty to ban nuclear weapons, as we have for chemical and biological weapons. I believe all that is missing is the political will. There is a model nuclear weapons convention that has been drafted. In fact, I think there's someone in the audience here who did a lot of work towards that. And it is in circulation as a document. It's quite straightforward, a plan to steadily prohibit nuclear weapons. It's all there. And maybe we could see some hope here in the huge upsurge of anti-war feeling, that perhaps we could channel that into a new abolition campaign like to abolish slavery. I'll leave you with that thought.